Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Quote, there's not a law saying I'm going to jail for doing something like this. There's nothing in stone. I guess it's just an ethics code. Like, we frown upon it, but there's no rule. There's no law broken.
SI's Ross Gellinger.
Why are we in then? Why aren't we in then if we can beat them, if we're better than them? It's like, well, hold on. Like, the results have to count for something.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Pat is gone. He in here. He's at a wedding of his son. I mean, son's getting married. It's kind of an excuse.
Yeah, we'll give him a pass.
Yeah. Ross is employee of the week, calling in from a cruise ship. Ross,
yeah,
are you
right
on that little boat that's looking for the Titanic? Is these your last words?
Thankfully not. Yeah, no, thankfully not. I am not reporting in from the submarine-like thing that they're looking for in the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. I am currently floating above water on a cruise ship that is docked for at least the next few minutes at Dominican Republic, at Amber Cove in the Dominican Republic. Just got off a smaller boat where we went fishing, deep sea fishing. We, in 3 hours, we caught one fish. Yeah. But it was a 3.5-foot barracuda, and we took it to a local, like, hole-in-the-wall restaurant in the Dominican Republic. They grilled it up for us, and it was amazing. So there you go.
Really? Barracuda?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, surprisingly good. If you've had shark or you've had, I can't think of the other fish, but if you've had like shark meat, it's similar. It's like a really thick, coarse kind of type fish, but it was really good.
The other white meat. All right. Well, your dedication here to doing it is commendable. I don't know. Maybe we should institutionalize you, because there's got to be a cocktail bar somewhere on some deck right now that's calling.
Hey, I can take an hour. I can take an hour to step away from the cocktails. I've had it. Lord knows I've had enough already.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All you can drink on the. They're not asking you to drive the boat. Yeah. That's this right. Other boat has fascinated me. I know this isn't college football, but I can't imagine these guys. They're all going to die, obviously. Mm. It's sad that they're going to die, but
yeah.
What a terrible situation. That you would choose to go on this little rickety thing and think it's going to work. And then obviously did not. Not a submarine. Yeah. You got all the experts. So a submarine. It's like a submersive or something like what? Mm. Like, you know the difference. Look like a little teeny submarine. Mm. They have like, it's like controlled by a guy with like, he's playing like Madden. Not even.
A little
joystick.
A little control. Little joysticks there. There you go. What is the update there? At sea, I haven't read much. They're still looking? Good. Is that they've lost communication and still looking, huh?
Yeah. Well, as we speak right now, yeah, no word. And but even if they're at the bottom, there's no way to get them. It's not like you just like send another boat down. This is the only one that would be crazy enough to try this. So right. Not looking good for those guys.
Is there a giant crane of some sort?
No. It's 12,500 feet down.
Wow.
So, wow. Yeah, we don't have cranes. Like, we don't have rescue ability, because why the hell would anyone try this?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, anyway. Tough break for those guys. We'll see. Maybe there's something else. Maybe it's saved. Maybe you're all laughing at me at this point. All right, we did want to talk some college football, though. Since you were gone, we had the affair of San Diego State trying to step out on the Mountain West and then asking permission if they could maybe step out and not have to pay as much money if they do get caught stepping out. Basically, what's going on, if you're not following this, so we talked about in the last episode, San Diego State buyout with the Mountain West goes from like $16.5 million if they leave before July 1st to, what was it, like $17 million more or something like that, $32 million or something.
Yeah, doubles.
Yeah,
they're
basically doubles. If it's after, so they ask for an extension on the cheap rate. We couldn't figure out why Mountain West would do this. And indeed, they have said, no, we're not letting you out half price.
Big surprise, yeah. That's
so right. The Mountain West is waiting for the Pac-12 to get their media deal done so they can then get invited to the Pac-12. But that may not happen, so they might have to go independent for a little while. At the same time, even if everything blows up, I mean, wouldn't the Mountain West still going to have to accept them back because they still need San Diego State? Whole thing's kind of a mess. But I think the real issue here at the end is, how big will it be for San Diego State if they're in the Pac-12? Because it seems like this is a foregone conclusion that they're going to go to the Pac-12 at some point. Obviously, if the Pac-12's media deal is not good enough, they could end up losing teams to the Big 12. And then they would probably replace them with the top of some of the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Either way, San Diego State's in a better spot. What do you think the potential of the Aztecs are?
Yeah, we kind of been, this has been growing, right, for a while now. It became pretty evident, I would say, late in the fall or something, early spring, that San Diego State is gonna end up in the Pac-12. People would describe it to me as all but signed sort of thing. Like the deal is basically done and basically verbally agreed to. And they've been acting that way. You know, San Diego State's been acting that way. A lot of people in the Pac-12 have been acting that way. So it's kind of only a matter of time before this happened. The way San Diego State went about it has been pretty bizarre. First of all, anything in writing, right, is going to get out. It's going to get out no matter what. And to put in writing we're planning on leaving, but this isn't us saying we're leaving. And the Mountain West sounds like saying, well, we take this as you leaving, saying you are leaving, not you're planning on leaving. And so now the big question is, gosh, does the Mountain West, are they going to, hold this money and their distribution, their last distribution? And not only that, but they're going to charge them double, potentially. I guess they could. So it's really complicated situation, kind of murky issue back and forth. I think they've had four letters back and forth to one another. But like you said, the big issue is that San Diego State's going to almost likely, right, 99% chance of, seems like, getting into the Pac-12. Are they going to get in the Pac-12 and be the Pac-11? Or are they going to add, is the Pac-12 going to add SMU to get back to 12? Or, as you mentioned, right, is the Pac-12's media deal, which sure seems like, and look, we've been saying this for a while, but sure seems like it's getting down to the nitty-gritty here. Last thing I was told a week ago was it, should be within the next 2 to 3 weeks, but we've been hearing that quite a bit. But it does seem like, especially given some of the things that have been happening, like some of these, and I think we talked about it a week ago, some of these Pac-12 schools have had board meetings where their board has given their president approval to sign a grant of rights. You've got the San Diego stuff kind of bubbling. Like, we feel like we're coming to something here. So a TV deal is going to get done. The issue is it going to be good enough, right? Like we've been talking about for 6 to 8 months. Is it going to be good enough for these Pac-12 schools to all stay together? Latest indications are, yeah, it should. But certainly Colorado, as we've discussed quite a bit, seems to be a little anxious and maybe a little impatient. And the Big 12 continues to pursue those schools like Colorado and maybe Arizona. So interesting times. We'll see here. It's going to be interesting to see how San Diego State does fit into whatever the Pac-12 is or becomes. They just made it to the Final Four, right, in basketball. In football, they've been pretty solid, and they just built this brand new stadium. I had a look at it last July. I was there and got a tour. It's incredible. And they just signed the soccer team. I think they just got the MLS team, I believe. Yeah. Like, so they've got a lot of things going for them, you know?
Yeah, it's the site of the old Padres and Chargers stadium, right? What was that thing called? Jack Murphy back in the day? Murphy stayed at Qualcomm and all that.
Qualcomm,
they dropped it, turned it in. It's not that far from the San Diego State's main campus. This is the closest they're going to get to putting something on campus. In case you weren't aware, property values in San Diego somewhat elevated. You're just grabbing a couple hundred acres to put a whatever the heck you need to put a football stadium. That not happening. Mm-hmm. So this is as good as it's going to get. Chargers are gone. I don't know that San Diego's ever going to become I know it's never going to become a San Diego State football town, but it certainly can't hurt when you have a city that big and this is the only live football option. I mean, somebody who liked going to Chargers games is going to be like, hey, what the heck? Let's go become Aztec fans, right? I mean, somebody. I don't know what that number is going to be. Media attention, things like that. They have a great recruiting area. Can they keep some of those more bigger share home when they're in the Pac-12, even a Pac-12 without UCLA and USC? It's a really interesting time for that program. School has obviously a lot of momentum. It's a Cal State. It's in the Cal State system, but academically it's becoming more competitive. As you know, it's not into the UC level of those campuses, but as a state school, it's doing really well. So there's a lot of great things about San Diego State. I wonder if it's just sort of like going to start chasing its tail around. It's like, okay, you're in, but then you're out, but then maybe you're in. Okay, but the league isn't going to be as good. But I think it makes a lot of sense for the Pac-12. You got to have something in Southern California. It's not LA, but it's the next best thing. I think the Arizona school certainly would like it. I don't know. This is where it's at. If I'm the Pac-12, that's the option. Let me ask you this. Boise State, historically a much, much better program, national prominence, routinely a top 20 team for a long, long time. Hasn't been as good since Chris Peterson left. But even Brian Harsin had I think he had four or five straight 10-win seasons, a couple 12s. Andy Avalos, they struggled in 2021, but did pretty well last year. I think they were 10-4. But that program's had a long run of success. They're an afterthought here. Is that simply because of Boise, or is it because this program slipped and they didn't invest enough?
Boise, it's been odd because we're right in the middle of like all of this conference realignment stuff, and you don't hear Boise in the mix in much at all. I mean, the Big 12 is being really aggressive with targeting a lot of different teams, and you know, you hear, and I've written a little bit about like the UConn and the UNLV, and obviously San Diego State and SMU with the Pac-12 as well, and Memphis even, as we talked about on the show quite a bit. But you don't hear Boise. And the one thing everybody will come back to is, number one, they are remote enough to where I don't know how many schools, you know, want to take like their volleyball team or softball team to Boise, Idaho. So they're like, you know, really remote. And number two, it's just, you know, it goes back to TV and TV numbers, right? And TV data and viewership. And it's not like, I guess in a way it's not a huge market compared to some of these other places, I guess. It's been odd to see them. I know. But people will point to that like, oh, it's not a big market and it's too remote. And I mean, I remember Boise getting really close with the American. This was like maybe 2 years ago. It got really close with the American Conference in negotiations, Boise did. Maybe closer than people realize. And I think there was a disagreement. And I don't know I don't remember the specifics, but the conference, like Boise wanted to maybe take all their sports or something. And there was a disagreement among the American athletic directors and presidents. They didn't want all their sports. So again, it's kind of part, and you hear this with Gonzaga too, with issues with the Big 12 when they're talking about Gonzaga. The first thing you hear is, man, do we really want to take like our volleyball team and our swimming team or whatever? We want to take all those sports. They just want your basketball team. You know, did Boise, they just want your football team. But the school doesn't, they want everything. You know, if you're the school, you want to bring everything. So I think that's a big part of it too. I know that's what happened with the negotiations with the American a couple of years ago.
Feels like these at some point that has to break. Like the money is in Boise State football and Gonzaga basketball, and honestly, Boise and Gonzaga should be playing in everything else. It's never made sense. So Boise, Idaho, 75th biggest metropolitan area in the country, obviously not a big city. 764,000 people in the 2020 census lived in Metro Boise. But in 2000, it was only 464. And it grew 150,000 to 616 in 2010. It grew another 150,000 in 2020. So, like, it's going to get to, wow. I mean, at this pace, it's an awesome place. It's a great area. The city is vibrant. There are Fortune 500, all the stuff. I think my thing with Boise State, particularly the football, is during that growth, from 2000 to 2020, they add 300,000 residents. And all that money and all those jobs and all of that. And they have this killer football team. And they never really got all the people to show up at the games. They only sold out so much, and they never were able to expand their, like, if they're sitting on a 50,000 seat stadium now and they're filling it, that and Boise is Boise State, everything, you know, and they had built in and fundraised for it and ridden this, you'd be like, man, this is a hot city, hot program, hot everything, right? We want to be in on Boise. For whatever reason, it just didn't happen. Like, their attendance still isn't that great. And it's not for lack of winning. Like, I just never understood how they had that little stadium, and that's fine, and the blue turf's cool, very famous, but they just never quite got there, you know?
Yeah. What do you make of that? It's just support in general for, like, football, like college, not like college football, not enough college football people, so to speak. Like, I know Boise, part of the reason Boise's grown is because people moving from California, right? From what I understand, and I guess I don't have any data on that, but I'm guessing, like, a lot of those people that are moving in aren't big college football fans.
Yeah, I think that's obviously, it's not a you know, who's moving in, right? Or somebody's moving in for this reason or that isn't necessarily, but you're still the only show in town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's still, I mean, look for the football attendance averages, but, like, I'm not saying, so they averaged 34,000 last year. It's an attendance record. That's good. Yeah, maybe they're doing better than I think in terms of attendance. Just feels like if that was 50, I'm not asking for a lot, you know? It's not like I'm like, they should be Nebraska, 85,000 every single week, but, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing it, but I don't understand what it is that we're having all this discussion of everything in the West, and nobody's like, "Hey, what about Boise?" You know, it's a growing area. It's a cool area, and they've proven that they can be really, really good at this sport with nothing going for them. I mean,
maybe the area is too cool to sit at a college football game. You know what I mean? Really, though. Like, think about attendance in Miami or other play LA, or, you know, they have trouble. There's too much to do there, especially, like, outdoorsy. And I know Boise is, like, a beautiful place for the outdoors. And it really, it's one of those things, like, hey, would you sit this football game, or would you go fly fishing or mountain hiking or whatever? As it does sound like a cool place. It's too cool, Dan. It's too cool.
Too cool. More boring. Maybe that's city. It. I mean, with San Diego, San Diego State isn't filling, like, I don't know. It's just something. I don't know what it is. It's just, it seems like a missed opportunity for Boise State. I mean, look at this. I'm looking at their past. Like, 2002, they finished 15th in the AP poll. End AP poll. 2003, 16th. 2004, 12th. They only go 9-4 and 05. 06, they finished fifth. Mm-hmm. They win the Fiesta Bowl with Peterson. That's when it went like, all right, here we go, right? were no longer that cute. 2008, eight, they finished 11th, then they finished 4th, then they finished 9th, they finished 8th, and then they finished 18th. There's a five-year run of top 20 finishes and three in the top 10, right? They go, they lose three games in that. They lose five games in 5 years. 16, you know, and even Harsin had a bunch of, you know, pretty good seasons. It just seems like, I don't know. I've been out there in a little while. 34,000 is not bad. It just feels like there could have been more. Something got missed because you had the product.
Yeah.
You had this. Everybody listening here knows about Boise State. It just didn't quite happen for them. And I don't know. Now, look, they are a mediocre Pac-12 TV deal or a Colorado and, you know, Colorado and Arizona taking off. To getting a, probably getting a bid into the Pac-12, and it, you know, maybe it works out better, but I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like it's kind of wild that we're talking about schools out west, and it's not not the one that was legitimately one of the best teams in the West, and they beat everybody head to head, Oregon's and all these stuff. It wasn't just for a while. I was like, oh, they don't play anybody. It's like then they started beating everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, when the realignment story I wrote back in like mid-May, it kind of was based around the targets, the Big 12 targets that were discussed at Big 12 meetings in early May, like the expansion targets they discussed, basically the eight to 10 expansion targets. And from what I understood, like Boise wasn't in there. In you know, I didn't mention them in the story, and Lord, I heard about it from Boise fans. Like, why aren't you mentioning us? Like, what do you got against us? And it's like, it's not me. This is you know, this is what I was on the screen at these meetings. But it was a good point by them, right? It's like, yeah, why wasn't Boise on that? You know, and then I started asking around, and yeah, you get the, oh, they're too remote, and oh, we don't want to take all of our teams and have to go there. Oh, you know, their TV market's just not great, and you know, you hear those things, but it is weird for like UNLV and in Memphis and all that to be mentioned, SMU and not Boise.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool place, and it's getting bigger literally by the day. Yeah. All right, Coach Saban was talking to Fox Sports' Joel Klatt, I think on his podcast, and he was talking about the playoff selection committee. He took issue with last year, the Crimson Tide not getting in based on their two losses and not what the sports books apparently thought of the Alabama. He is not happy with the playoff. All we do is take the teams that win the most games at the end of the year, put them into the playoffs, Saban said. But do you really get the best teams? When they told me we would be favored against three out of four teams that got in the playoffs, I'm like, why aren't we in the playoff? Now, it was a big deal, obviously, when they didn't get in because they had their case. They were right. They had two close losses. Was it Tennessee and then LSU? And that's pretty much what kept them out. And so he's nervous about that. I guess going forward, if you're going to have parity, you have to have a better way of figuring out who has the best teams, not just because you lose two games on the last play of the game, Saban said. So he is still chapped about these two losses on the road. Still bothered. I am sure the playoff committee would love to put him through one of those mock things and teach Nick Saban how they try to factor in everything, although not sports books. My guess is let me start with this. Does he have a point?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. I think there's two things here. You've got the most deserving teams, and then you've got maybe a separate category of the best teams. And it's something we go back and forth on. It's like the most deserving versus the best, you know, the resume versus who would win on a neutral field sort of thing. And I know Nick Saban has for a while, right? Talked about the best teams, the one that would win on a neutral field. What is a little ridiculous is when he starts talking about point spreads. You know, he starts talking about point spread. I think he did in that interview with Joel Klatt. He's like, oh, you know, they tell me we've been favored by a touchdown or more against all these teams. Well, why aren't we in then? Why aren't we in then if we can beat them, if we're better than them? It's like, well, hold on. Like, the results have to count for something, right? The on the field, the results, the games have to count for something. Like, and even though you just squeak by in some of these games, or you barely lost in some of these games, the result has to count. You lost. Like, that has to be part of the equation. And yeah, I think that most would say that Alabama team, and probably most would say that there's a lot of teams in the SEC, maybe, you know, LSU, who were better than maybe some of the ones that made the playoff. But you've got to, like, take some of these results. You do. Here's the thing. We won't be arguing about this as much in a year, right? We'll have an expanded playoff where Alabama would have gotten in, and all these teams that are kind of on the bubble, all these teams that the best teams will be able to get in, and then we won't. Now we'll have an argument about the 14th best team, right, instead of the 6th best team getting in, and that team being left out. So it'll be a different argument, but I do think it's ridiculous when he starts citing the betting, like the Vegas lines, and like, see, they say we're better, we should be in. It's like, no, the Vegas does not, they're not the committee.
Bama was a 13-point favorite against LSU. They lost.
Yeah, right.
They went 3-5-1 against the spread last year against Power 5 opponents. So the spread is the spread.
Yeah. To get you to bet on it, you know? Right. It's not necessarily sometimes a gauge of who's better.
The public is going to pound on Alabama on every single one really hasn't have anything to do with it. I get his point, but, you know, this is the thing. It's college football. And part of what makes college football fun is the absurdity of the operation. There's 135 teams. I think we're up to 135. There's a whole bunch more trying to get in, playing for one title.
Yeah.
There's no way to do this. Okay. And one of Nick Saban's made a lot of money in a sport because of the absurd passion of this pursuit. And so you got to accept that this isn't the NFL. You can't just do win percentages or something like that. Or this isn't the, you know, MLB. You got a 162 game sample size. It's college football. It's never going to be perfect. It's always going to be clunky. Clunky's the good part. So
that's
you
right.
Had your chances. Exactly. You didn't get it done. I wonder, is he setting the tone? Here's what I want to know. Is everything with Saban, he knows the thing's changing after a year, right? We're going to come up with a better system. Well, guess what? Here's your system. 12 are getting in. I don't hear anybody complain because you could either win your league and then you got these other six. I don't want to hear a team 13. But,
yeah.
So he knows that. Is he setting the tone because he thinks LSU's going to win the West? I'm not even getting to the, like, we're not winning this. We're going to have to fight to get in. He's starting the politicking now. I got Georgia in the East. I got LSU in my division.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not sitting on last year's team. They just brought in Tyler Buchner. Like, he's not sitting there with all his guys like last year going, hey, we should be able to win this thing. They won't be favored. I don't think they were favored every game this year. I don't think they'll be favored every game this year. But is he sitting there already saying, I'm going to start chirping now, plant some seeds in the committee? I mean, this is Nick Saban now.
Yeah. I know. And he has some sway, obviously. He has significant sway. I remember we talked about back in December. Remember he made this pitch live in the middle of the Big Ten championship game? Wasn't it at halftime of the Big Ten championship game? They put him on and he made this pitch, and all the committee members, I spoke to a few of them, they were watching. They were watching, all sitting around in a room. They were watching it, and I don't know that it influenced them, but they saw it, and they kind of, some of them, I think, saw through it in a way, right? They saw through it. They knew it was happening. So, yeah, maybe he's just getting a jump start on that.
I wouldn't put it past him. He doesn't say anything by accident.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe he's starting to sit there and say, what I want is them to start thinking, if we're taking a second or third SEC team, what's Vegas think?
Yeah.
Because he's got a tough go this year. I think LSU will be favored to win the West. Georgia's obviously going to be favored to win the whole thing. So, I don't know. Saban's tricky, sneaky. All right, before we're going to get to this bowling story, by the way. Stephen F. Austin bowling. But we got a little more football. No story has ever been sent to me more than the Stephen F. Austin bowling story. If you haven't heard it, you're about to hear it. Stay tuned. Florida Gators, Billy Napier. In the last week has received eight now. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. They're coming, they keep coming in. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 recruiting commitments in the last week. A whole bunch of them in the top 200 on Rivals 24 seconds. A whole bunch of big-time recruits. Jamonta Waller, big-time edge rusher out of Mississippi. Everyone's all of a sudden pledging to Billy Napier and the Gators. This is much needed. The fans are dying for good recruits. I think the Vegas win total on Florida is like 5.5 this year. There's not a lot else to get excited about. How big is this for him to get something going if this season spins the way it very well might?
Yeah, huge. And especially given what happened in December and January, right, with Jay and Rashada, and they took quite a bit of punches, the Florida, just in recruiting in general, and the way that situation transpired and their NIL situation there, the NIL collective there, it kind of got overhauled. They have got a new CEO in there, and there was a little bit more positive movement lately from there, and when it comes to NIO, and clearly that's you know, part of this, I'm sure, is the NIL part of it. But it just shows that, hey, in recruiting you can bounce back from some of this stuff. I feel like when the Jaden Rashada stuff happened, there was this, people kind of thought that Florida would, in Billy Napier, would, that would be it. You know, it's like, oh, they'll never be able to recruit again after this public embarrassment. But here they are, right? They bounced back pretty well, and they'll probably be relying on a lot of these young players pretty early. And I'm sure that's also part of why Billy Napier and crew are getting some of these, right? Is hey, come here, you can play immediately. Also, man, Florida in general has been on a roll even outside of football. Like just in the last few minutes, their baseball team advanced to the national championship series, the College World Series, national championship series. And I think their men's golf team won the national title, and their men's track outdoor, I think track and field, won the national championship all in the last like month or so. So, the Gators are a rolling, and that includes Billy and company. Now they just got to do it on the field.
This is the thing with Florida on the field. Not much expected this year. And a win total 5.5 for the Gators pops, right? We'll see what they do. But if you greatly exceed that, you're at 7 or 8. And then you get into year 3, and that's the 2024 schedule where we talked about the other day on the SEC. They get Miami at home. They get UCF at home. They're at Florida State. They get Georgia and Jacksonville, LSU and Ole Miss and A&M visit. They're at Mississippi State, at Tennessee, at Texas. Like, you're year 3 in that. Like, Gator fans have to be pretty patient with Billy Napier. And I think they got, you know, you can't – that schedule – this roster in year 2 and that schedule in year 3 doesn't exactly – speak to, hey, we're going to be a national contender. They could be a hell of a lot better of a program in 2024, but how are you winning all those games?
Yeah.
That, you know, Urban Meyer wasn't taking that schedule on.
No.
As good as those teams
were. I was looking at their 2023 schedule just to see. Like, I think they'd be favored and maybe certainly five games, but getting maybe six, going through it. You know, they play at Utah. They're not going to be favored there. They come home, play McNeese. They play Tennessee, Charlotte. So they'll obviously be favored against McNeese and Charlotte. Then they have to go at Kentucky, where I wouldn't think they'd be a favorite, certainly not a preseason favorite in that game on the road at Kentucky. Come back against Vanderbilt, they'll be favored at home against Vanderbilt. I doubt they'll be favored on the road at South Carolina. That's the next game. Then they get a week off before the Georgia game, where, of course, they won't be favored. And then they host Arkansas, maybe favored in that one. Then it's at LSU and at Missouri before hosting Florida State. So, yeah, even in 2023, it's no picnic for the Gators. But, you know, we talked about on this pod quite a bit about Billy Napier and just what he did at Louisiana and turning down. You know, he turned down quite a few jobs, waiting on kind of the right one. And he kind of knew what he was getting himself into. I think he knew where he was going. I think they kind of knew, too, that eventually the SEC wasn't going to have divisions and you're going to play everybody, you know, and this was going to even get more difficult. And here we are, and it is. He's dealing with two juggernauts, and not just Alabama and Georgia anymore, but maybe a third one in Tennessee, and Shane Beamer's got it going at South Carolina, too. So it's it's tough.
One more recruiting note. Arizona State picked up a four-star quarterback from the class of 2025, Michael Butter Tollefson. First off, the kid's name is Butter.
Butter.
Love it.
Perfect.
Excellent QB recruit. Held offers from Georgia, Tennessee, Oregon, Florida State, all of that. The Oregon offer was given to him by Kenny Dillingham, who is now at Arizona State. Dillingham is the quarterback recruiter. He had gotten Dante Moore to go from Detroit to Oregon. That's what he's seen as. That's what he's supposed to do, get quarterbacks. They got their first quarterback. Obviously, they wanted, like, Dylan Raiola, who was sitting in Arizona last year. That was too big of a mountain to climb at that point. But that's a very significant recruit for Arizona State. Good start. We'll see where it all heads up. But when you're brought in to get quarterbacks to come to Arizona State, helps to get one. They also do have Jaden Rashada, who you mentioned, that had gotten promised, you know, $3.5 billion or something from some group of Gator fans that turned out to not be true. So he's starting at Arizona State. And who knows how good he is going to be. But they're starting to get it. Starting bubbles of life there at Arizona State. Quick update on a story. We remember the story of the Ecuadorian woman who was declared dead and then knocked on her coffin from the wake in a shocker.
Has the doctor been fired yet?
I don't know. The coffin started to make sounds. The problem was the doctor was eventually correct. She has now passed away. She was alive, but there's a reason you're declared dead is because you're almost dead. So she made it another week. Bella Montoya, rest in peace, Bella. So she fought to the end, man. Battler.
She did, didn't she? That's right. She was kicking in that coffin, baby. I can't imagine waking up. Waking up in a coffin.
Respect.
And then like a week later, dying again. Also. Boy, don't you think they, when they pronounced her dead, like the second time, I'm sure her family and others were like, are you sure this time? Are Double we sure check, before yeah. we load grandma into the coffin again?
Yeah, you want to double check that no pulse. Like maybe wait a day.
Yeah.
Maybe wait a day on the wake.
Let's give it a day. Let's give grandma a day here before we load her on into the coffin again and have a wake and invite all these people. Also, do you come to the wake again? If you came the first time, do you get it? Does it count? Do you have to come again?
I'm absolutely coming because you don't know what's going to happen. Last
you
time
don't know
I was
what's
there,
happen. You can pop out again.
Yes. International news story occurred. I mean, I'm definitely going open casket too, right? Got to go open casket.
Yeah.
Got to give him a chance. Don't make grandma bang on the door. Just let her, you know, just let her sit up like the Undertaker or something. I don't know. Yeah. Very, very terrifying. All right, let's get to this story. You know, we're big college bowling fans. Big college bowling fans.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. Right.
Stephen F. Austin. First off, one of the all time great stories, the Lufkin Daily News, which has won a Pulitzer Prize in the past. Nathan Haig. Well, this ran in the Lufkin Daily News. I don't know. Nathan Haig is from the Nacogdoches Daily Sentinel. Somebody wrote this headline. The headline says, spare relationship causes awkward split. Okay? Just remember that. Spare relationship causes awkward split. So Stephen F. Austin assistant bowling coach Steve Lemke chose to resign rather than be fired this spring after the university discovered he had an affair with a student athlete. Yeah, that's a no-no. Don't sleep with the players.
Yeah. Frowned upon, yes.
Coach Lemke frowned upon.
His quotes are amazing. I can't wait till you read them.
This is incredible. The athlete was apparently a fifth year, he's out of eligibility, probably fifth year athlete, but you know, power dynamics. I don't want to get into it. Can't do it. Don't do it. But he did it anyway, he's out of job. Here's where it gets even juicier. Lemke is married to head coach Amber Lemke.
Mm-hmm.
He's his wife's assistant. And then he has an affair with one of the student athletes. Great line by SFA athletic director Ryan Ivey. He's not working here anymore. no statement there from Ryan Ivey of like, the university is terminated. It's just like, I ain't here no more. Here's the deal. Steve Lemke decides he's not going down without getting his side of the story out, no matter how unfortunate that side is. So he does an interview with Nathan Haig of the Nacogdoches Daily Sentinel. This is a one hell of a Stephen A. Austin beat writer. And these quotes. Lemke defended his actions and said the relationship was consensual, but might have been, quote, amplified to the magnitude it is now because of the national championship caliber that we've developed. Oh, yeah, they've won, like,
it's that
multiple national championships. They're powerhouse, Stephen F. Austin. I think it's more of an ethics thing.
That's why it's gone viral.
That's why it's gone viral, because so many of us out there are big Stephen F. Austin fans, and you know, anything that happens with Stephen F. Austin bowling is obviously going to be national news. Anything, especially the assistant coach having an affair with one of the players when his wife is the head coach, which actually still wouldn't have been a story, except Steve Lemke decided to do this interview with the Nacogdoches paper.
That's right. Yeah.
I think it's more of an ethics thing, he said, when it comes to the college, as far as a coach slash teacher being with a student athlete. Okay. If you ever find yourself in this position, at this point, is he like, I knew it was kind of a no-no.
Kind of.
But there's not a rule saying it can't happen, Steve Lemke said. Probably is now.
Yeah, right. Putting that in the bowling rule book, you can't sleep with any other bowlers if you're on staff.
If you're the assistant bowling coach, don't sleep with the bowlers. Seems simple. Didn't need to be said, apparently. Quote, there's not a law saying I'm going to jail for doing something like this. There's nothing in stone. I guess it's just an ethics code. Like, we frown upon it, but there's no rule. There's no law broken. End quote. Okay, Steve Lemke. Lemke said the affair with the bowler was discovered when Amber Lemke saw a text message from the bowler on Steve Lemke's phone, he said. Why is he describing this? Why does he do it?
Just shut up, Steve. You've done enough.
No comment. I apologize for hurting my family and disappointing my family, my school. No. He goes on. It didn't have anything in detail, Steve Lemke said of the text. It was just about how amazing I am, basically, in general perspective. Amber saw that and questioned me. And I got to the point where it just built up so much that I basically told her the truth after she dug through my phone. End quote.
I mean, some of these lines, I know you're going to get to like all the practices and stuff.
We're getting all of them.
Yeah, makes you think that, man, these two should have got divorced a long time ago.
A 38-year-old man thought this was a good line to give to the. It was just about how amazing I am, basically, in general perspective. I'm glad the bowler liked him. I can see Amber being like, why is so-and-so like, Lemke was in a volunteer assistant until Amber Lemke took over the bowling program in 2011. 8 years later, Lemke became an assistant coach. He was a volunteer. He technically reports to an associate AD because of state nepotism laws. First off, whatever the nepotism law, it's clearly not working. The guy, the woman hired her husband.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so I love this. Right. Well, like, why have the law if this is all you got to do to get away with it? This is where he starts complaining. I was a stay-at-home dad for 5 years with the kids while Amber got to go off and coach the team. And when she'd get back, I'd run practices on top of taking care of the kids while she was back, Steve Lemke said. He's now complaining in the night. This is like the Jerry Springer show.
It's amazing. Now he's the victim. Yes, he's the victim.
The poor guy was not, just also he's a not stay-at-home dad. At all. And Amber's off getting to go to the glamorous, mid-major college bowling.
Yes.
At the Snowball Lanes over there in Hot Springs, Arkansas, when they travel again, I would sit back and take care of the kids. He was bitter. Then when I got hired almost forced me to run practices. Mm. Well, you were the assistant coach.
Poor guy.
I was a volunteer the entire time before that, trying to help out Amber. Once I got hired on, one thing stemmed from another. I felt like I was doing too much for what I was being valued at.
Mm-mm-mm.
Worst husband of the year?
What do you think the writer is thinking?
We got some bad contenders this year. We've had some contenders.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He's right up there. The reporter's got to be like hearing these things and thinking, is this real? Or even, should I tell this guy he shouldn't be saying these things on the record? It's pretty wild.
Did they like meet up for a beer and he just like unloaded a trauma like, dump?
Yeah,
trauma. Oh, Amber, man.
Therapy reporting session.
What the hell do you do in bowling practice anyway? Don't you just bowl?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know, poor guy to run bowling practice. Yeah. He was probably drinking beer in the back.
Hitting on the girls.
And apparently, yeah, drinking beer and doing other things with the bowlers. Jeez, crazy.
This joker's like Costanza.
And then turns himself into the victim. Yes, that's really? Right.
Was I not supposed to do that? I got to plead ignorance on this one.
Yeah.
Wasn't right. in the rules.
Was that wrong? Should I have not had sex with the secretary on my desk? Was that wrong?
I mean, Amber didn't say it. I didn't hear anything from Amber about this.
No, we didn't.
Amber, like if to, this though. Guy winds up with a bowling ball upside his head while he sleeps.
Yeah. Yes. I would like to hear from Amber. This calls for a follow-up, Dan.
Well, if anyone can get this done, it's Nathan Haig of the Nacogdoches Daily Sentinel, clearly. And if Amber to talk, that will be the second Pulitzer Prize.
There you go.
Spare relationship causes awkward split. who, I mean, these horn dog assistant bowling coaches down there in Texas. Who knew? Mm-mm-mm. Who knew? You'd be like, hey, what do you do, man? Like, you're on a cruise, right? You're meeting people from all over. Mm-hmm. Assistant bowling coach, college bowling coach. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man, that's probably a pretty boring life. Apparently not.
Yeah.
No.
Although he had to be mm-hmm. the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
So Steve Lemke is now out of his job. Can't really see him getting another one. Assuming Amber's dumping his ass.
No, not after that interview.
Like, not only like did he diddle this bowler, but then he's complaining about the job. I don't think this guy's getting another job in college athletics. No.
Steve Lemke, you can come on our show. If you're listening and you've got nothing else to do, come on and explain yourself better. We want to know. We'll give you a fair. I mean, we're making fun of you now. We'll give you a fair form. We can get that done. Assistant bowling coach.
There you go. Our guests are only reserved for the elite, right? So
this is it. This is elite. This is elite.
There you go.
This is when you get everyone to care about Stephen F. Austin bowling.
That's it.
They won two national titles and two second place finishes. I gotta say, Amber Lemke has got to be one hell of a coach. How is that possible? That's I don't know how or why anyone would be the, like, what creates a good bowling champion? Like, is there a bowling, like, recruiting area that's more fertile than some other? Or, like, what? I don't know what it would take, right? Like, you understand some stuff.
No idea. Yeah.
You're
part of the country? Isn't it?
Bowling?
That's big bowling, isn't it? Isn't upper Midwest-ish?
I don't
know. Why the Minnesotas and all that, I thought.
Yeah, there's nothing else to do in the winter, but apparently it didn't. Yeah. I mean, where is the Stephen F. Austin roster coming from? I'm going to look this up.
I don't know. I was about to say, I'm going to type in, you know,
biggest, I don't want bowling. Yeah, why is Stephen F. Austin a bowling power? And why doesn't someone, you know, we got a lot of ADs out there. You got a bowling team.
Look,
someone hire Amber Lemke.
Yeah. by the way, there it is. Upper Midwest, specifically the Great Lakes region, is the most popular bowling region of the United States. How about that?
Okay. Well, I don't. And I don't know who. We don't know who the. I don't want to say any names, right? Because it's like.
Look at this. Dan.
They're from Wisconsin. Look at the roster. Go ahead.
Look, listen to this line. The city, U.S. city with the most bowling alleys, Metro Detroit.
Really?
Look there. There you are. That's from OakenLaneBowlingCenter.com. So I don't know.
Well, hey, who doesn't like bowling? I did not know that. Well,
the bowling capital of America, though, is deemed to be Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, well, hold on here. I'm looking at the Stephen F. Austin bowling roster. We have someone from Ogdensburg, Wisconsin, Kenosha, Wisconsin, another from Ogdensburg. I think those are sisters. Carlisle, PA, a New Brownsville, Texas, a San Antonio, Texas, a Richardson, Texas, a Kenosha, Wisconsin, and two more Texans, and then someone from Maple Grove, Minnesota. And finally, someone from Raleigh, North Carolina. So this is it. Amber, he's sitting there complaining about being home with the kids because he's this, quote, stay-at-home dad. Amber's up there freezing on these recruiting trips, bringing in these Wisconsin girls, and they are kicking the hell out of the net. Why is Wisconsin not hired Amber Lemke?
Oh, I didn't think about that. Amber's off recruiting her husband's new girlfriends.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, that's awk.
Yeah,
that's awk. Why is
by
is
the way?
Amber,
so
where's Amber from?
Oh, that's a good question.
I got so many questions.
I'm obsessed with these bowling stats, by the way. The most bowling alleys per state. New York, 236 bowling businesses, whatever that means. Michigan's number two at 201. Uh-huh. And number three is Wisconsin at 197. So there you go.
All right, here we go. I got more Amber Lemke. Uh-oh. She graduated, or she was previously the coach. She went to Wisconsin Whitewater, then was the coach at Wisconsin Whitewater. And so she has put together, she was an assistant coach at Kenosha High School, where she's got a few kids. This is it. She's like the, like, you know, Harlem playground legend, like of bowling. I don't know. I don't want to call for someone to get fired, but what's up, Badgers? You're getting killed by Stephen F. Austin with your own girls. Justice for Amber. And Steve, you can just keep your ass in Nacogdoches.
The bowling pod.
All right. You got to go get back to vacation. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate you all. We'll be back next week. You're going to be back. Be back Monday. You're going to be on the show Monday. Or
I'll be back. I shall be back. Yes, I'll be back next week. Now I want to bowl, Dan. There's no bowling alleys on the cruise ship, though. Damn.
I bet that there is a bowling alley on the cruise ship.
Do you?
I bet there is. I've
seen one or heard about it.
But, well, you look a little harder. I apparently have 201 bowling alleys to choose from if I want that as my entertainment tonight.
Yeah, there you go. Look at you. You learned.
There's a lot
today.
Of them. I admit there are bowling alleys all around me. I rarely go. I did when the kids were little, but I don't bowl. But I could. I mean, anyone. I've bowled. Everyone has.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now we know. See the things you learn on this podcast. And it's there free. It's free. All right. Tell a friend. We'll be back next week with more action. June is almost done. Getting close to the season. We will talk to you later.